Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons. For today's show, we're at the Minnesota State Fair with some great guests ready to talk about higher education and employment for veterans, Minnesota veterans' homes, all of this with a special co-host today, the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Larry Shelado. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
As we near the end of Ramadan, a month-long period where Muslims are engaging in fasting, prayer, and atonement. Every year during the month of Ramadan, all Muslims fast from dawn until sundown, abstaining from food and drink, and any physical needs, pleasures, and wants. Those who are sick, elderly, or on a journey, and women who are pregnant or nursing are exempted from and make up their fasting during an equal number of days later in the year. If they are physically unable to do this, they must feed a needy person for every day missed. The fasting during Ramadan is regarded as a method of self-purification, closeness to God, and forgiveness. The end of Ramadan is celebrated with elaborate dinners called Eid with friends and family. Many soldiers and airmen of the Minnesota National Guard have become acquainted with Muslim traditions during periods of duty abroad. In fact, I personally have been stationed in countries with strong Muslim beliefs, once in Bosnia-Herzegovina and once in Iraq. I have witnessed firsthand the practice of the Muslim faith and have developed a profound respect for its believers and way of life. On behalf of the Minnesota National Guard, I would like to wish all of our Muslim friends in Minnesota and around the world a blessed and joyous Eid. Ramadan Mubarak.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. This week, joining us as a special co-host, the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Larry Shelado. Commissioner, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Oh, thank you.
Commissioner, when I see you, I never know whether I should address you as Lieutenant General or as Commissioner, but I'll just call you Commissioner General. How's that?
Okay, that's fine. That'll work.
Commissioner, can you share with our listeners your first taste of being a veteran goes back to Vietnam?
That's correct. April of 1972.
And then you had a long career, including many years in the National Guard, culminating with being the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard through October of 2010.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, but when I came back from Vietnam, I was out for about a year and a half, and I was missing something. A good friend of mine was a company commander looking for a lieutenant, and he talked me into joining the Guard, and I said I would stay in as long as it worked, and it lasted 38 years.
Just a short pull for a three-star general, wasn't it?
That's right. Wonderful pull. I loved it.
Now, General, shortly after you retired, which was the end of 2010, the governor called upon you for another job, didn't he?
Well, yeah, I retired on Halloween, October 31st, and about the first month I was getting somewhat used to retirement, but something was missing, so I threw my hat in the ring, and on January 12th, the governor said, do you want the job? And I said yes, and everything has been going fast and furious since.
So, Commissioner, you went from commanding 14,000 soldiers and airmen at the Minnesota National Guard to taking care of, 380,000 veterans in Minnesota?
Yes, 380,301, based on the latest VA information I can find off the website.
And you've been in the role as Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs for about 8 months now. Can you tell us, what does the Commissioner do?
Well, you know, I was very, very fortunate to inherit a well-disciplined group. 90% of my personnel, time, budget, and so forth is with the Veterans Home, and you'll be talking more about that later with Shelley. And then the other 10% deals with the what we call the processing and assisting veterans in applying for and getting their jobs and or their benefits and education, so forth. So it's making sure these program systems are working. And actually, the biggest thing is just getting the information out to the people, the veterans, to know what's available for them.
Hey, Commissioner, I understand one of your visions as commissioner for the department was to serve as a safety net for veterans. Can you explain what that means, sir?
The safety net. It's kind of interesting, but first of all, only less than 28% of all the veterans in the state of Minnesota are receiving some type of benefit. And every now and then, for example, when the tornado hit North Minneapolis, we were able to have funds available to give some emergency loans out. That's very good. Someone who needs a home mortgage, we're able to help them out. We have over 14,000 who have taken advantage of the GI Bill. So we're very, very fortunate that way. And those are the safety nets that help people get on with their lives and build on their lives and move forward.
We're broadcasting today from the Minnesota State Fair. We're speaking with the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Larry Shelado, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour right here on Newstalk, AM 1130. Commissioner, can you give me a little background or tell us a little bit about the economic impact veterans here in Minnesota make?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because what I have found is through the Veterans Administration and so forth, veterans bring back to the state of Minnesota $1.8 billion worth of revenue. And that's through home loans, insurance, so forth, pensions, benefits, as well as the two major veterans hospitals, both in Minneapolis and St. Cloud. So with that, we're able to take care of veterans, and with the benefits that they receive, plus other things such as their retirement income or Social Security, they do not go on our welfare rolls. They remain self-sufficient, and it's a productive member of our state society.
And Commissioner, what does the future hold for Minnesota veterans? What do you hope to see?
Well, what I hope to see for our veterans is, one, a continued involvement in our civic and social aspects of our great state. We have found that there's a lot of veterans who are community leaders and taking the lessons they have learned, the skills they have learned both in the military and their civilian occupations, and helping this great state move forward, taking care of all the people in the state of Minnesota.
And Commissioner, do you have some short-term and long-term goals for in your position as Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
Oh, yes. Well, short-term goals, one is just to stabilize our organizations and processes, the working closely with our county veteran service officers and our veteran service organizations, the American Legion, VFW, Disabled American Vets, AMVETS, Vietnam Veterans. There's a lot of organizations, just working with them, getting them synchronized to take care of the veterans community. Long-range goal is to partner with the veterans organizations, the Beyond the Yellow programs, which you are actively involved in, and just saying, how can we as a community take care of our own? Right now we're taking care of returning veterans, but I want to see that with homelessness, both military and non-military. There's just enough or many social issues that the community can help take care of. So that's kind of the long-range goal, and we are the organized structure that can set up a model for them to move forward.
Commissioner, you've brought several people with you today that we're going to talk about this hour. One of them, Shelley Kendrick.
Yes, our administrator with the Minneapolis Veterans Home.
And Barbara O'Reilly.
She is with our Women's Outreach Program.
Which is a new initiative.
That is correct. She'll talk about it, but women have become a far more integral part in our returning veterans, especially with those being overseas and in the combat zone.
And Gina Sobania.
Ah, yes. Minscu, and I'm a former Minscu employee, a president of a two-year college, very, very strong believer in education. And we have partnered with the educational systems in Minnesota to create that pathway for our returning vets to get back into school and on with their lives.
Thank you, Commissioner. Once again, we're broadcasting from the Minnesota State Fair. After a short break, we'll take a look at those serving our veterans at the Minnesota Veterans Homes. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk, AM 1130. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons with special co-host Commissioner Larry Shelledo of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Joining us next is the administrator of the Minneapolis Veteran Home, Shelley Kendrick. Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Shelley.
Thank you.
Can you give our listeners a brief overview of the five state veterans homes?
Sure. We have five state veterans homes, a total of 781 total veterans that live with us. 546 skilled nursing beds and 235 domiciliary beds, and those are board and care type type homes. There's a home in Silver Bay and a home in Laverne, Fergus Falls, Hastings, and then we're here in Minneapolis.
And Shelley, how many of those veterans in those 781 veterans has the commissioner met?
Probably a majority. He gets around a lot.
I've been to all five of them. And, the one to Laverne is a long trip, but it's well worth it.
I understand you shifted to what's called person-centered care. Can you explain what that means?
Yes, all of our homes have shifted towards that. And person-centered care is just how it sounds. It's care centered around the person. And what you do is you kind of adjust your environments, your service, around what the veteran needs and their family. And you include them in the actual care decisions that are being made.
Now, is that a new initiative or something you've been working on for a while?
We've been working on it for a while, but we're really in the process of moving that forward with our environments and setting up neighborhoods, town centers, and that type of thing for the veterans so that they feel more like a home rather than an institutional type setting.
And Shelley, how long have you been in your position as the administrator of the Minneapolis Veteran Home?
I've been there almost 9 months now. I started in December. But I've been in the nursing home field for 20-some years. I don't want to date myself. But
so you and the commissioner were learning what it's all about at the same time.
Yes, we are.
That's terrific. I understand there's been some great things happening in our veterans home. Can you touch on a few of those for us?
Sure. At the Minneapolis home, we're under construction right now with a new 100-bed facility that's all private rooms, private baths. And it's designed for that person-centered care environment with a lot of neighborhoods, a town center. There'll be a cafe, movie theater, a lot of things that you would normally see out in the community in your neighborhoods to participate in. We're providing that as well for our veterans.
Where do I sign up?
Yeah. You just give us a call and we'll get you on the waiting list.
Better put me on there. I might need it in about 10 years. Keep going.
Okay. As well as doing that, we're also we're just finishing up our new adult day center, and this is a building that we remodeled and renovated. It was a building that has been there since the 1800s, and we remodeled it, and it's three stories, and it's very home-like. It's set up for a new adult day center that we're hoping to open here sometime this fall. And that's for our veterans that are living at home, that the families are taking care of. They have medical needs. And this allows the family to bring them there during the day so that they can take care of their normal daily routine during the day, and we can then help them with the care of the veteran.
So is your goal there to keep the veterans home as long as possible and as much as possible?
Exactly. We know that we're really gearing up, too, for the future, because we know that there are a lot of veterans, going to be a lot of veterans out there that are going to need us. We, you know, hopefully they won't need us, but if they do, we're going to be prepared to help them stay at home as long as possible and not have to go into a nursing home. But we will be there providing those services should they need us. And unfortunately, there will be a lot of veterans that will probably need us, but we will be there.
We're broadcasting today from the Minnesota State Fair, and my special co-host is Commissioner Larry Shelledo, and we're speaking with Shelley Kendrick, the administrator of the Minneapolis Veterans Home, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk, AM 1130. Shelley, I understand that this adult daycare center will be only the second one of its kind in the country?
That's correct. There's another one in New York that is a medical model that it has been certified by the Veterans Administration, and we will be the second one. And it's a like I said, a medical model supported with social activities and things that the veteran can do to enhance their lives.
Tom, what I'd like to add is I had the opportunity to tour the facility, and I encourage you, if anytime you want to come out, I'll take you through there. Shelley will also. It truly is state-of-the-art, because with the Historical Society involved in the initial planning, it's maintained its original exterior and some of the core woods and so forth. Absolutely beautiful that way, yet it's modern. It is state-of-the-art. And I'm predicting that some of the people that will take advantage of this will probably prefer that and not want to go home.
Uh-oh. Shelley's going to be busy.
Yeah.
Actually, Commissioner, I was out there. The chaplain invited me out to speak at a Sunday service about the Minnesota Military Family Foundation.
And
it's a beautiful place.
Yes. And with the three different levels, it allows us to provide three different types of care at the different levels based on what the need is of the veteran and their medical level of care.
And if veterans are interested in finding out more about the Veterans Home, where can they go for information?
The best place to go is our website, minnesotaveteran.org, and there they'll see a link to the Veterans Homes.
Shelley, anything else you want to share with our veterans listening today?
Well, yes, I would like to first of all say hi to all of our veterans from the home that are here at the fair. And that will be listening to us as well. So hello, everybody, and thank you to the caregivers at the Minneapolis Veterans Home and all of the Minnesota homes. They are truly angels for our veterans.
Commissioner, it sounds like you've got a great administrator of the Minneapolis Veterans Home.
You know, I am very, very pleased and proud. She's made great strides in just getting the atmosphere and the esprit de corps, if you will, of that operation going, and everyone there, the residents on up, are just having a good time enjoying it. And also the veteran service organizations and the volunteerism of this state has just been phenomenal. They alone give over 60-some thousand volunteer hours a year. That's 30-some full-time employees. So the community is caring. The work that the home is doing is just outstanding. And Shelley is absolutely correct. This is a state-of-the-art facility. I've been to national conferences, going to another one, and Minnesota is always looked at and referred to with great respect.
Commissioner, it must make it a lot easier to be able to operate these facilities with all the volunteers and the donations that come in from the people of Minnesota.
Oh, that's some of those lessons learned you were trying to talk about before. Every now and then they get a new bus, you know, to move our veterans around. And I said, where'd that come from? Well, it's the veterans organizations are donating it. So it's phenomenal. They keep surprising me all the time.
Commissioner, are you and Shelley whispering in somebody's ears for some of these things?
You know, I haven't. That's the beauty of it, is they know it, and a lot of these organizations have adopted the veterans. Up in Fergus Falls, I was visiting, and a veterans there have an opportunity to be out of that facility 200 times a year. That's where people come up, pick them up. And the most popular one was kind of interesting and cute, was they go to this truck stop and have breakfast. So the veterans can flirt with the waitresses and have a good time, but they are out of the building. And it's a change of pace, and those little acts of kindness are priceless.
And Shelley, one more time for our listeners, where can they go for information about the Minnesota Veterans Homes?
Go to minnesotaveteranos.org.
Ms. Kendrick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Shelley Kendrick, the administrator of the Minneapolis Veterans Home. We have links to more information on Facebook and at minnesotamilitaryradiohour.com. Each week, we feature Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. Recently, Jerry Hammer was showing a Vietnam veteran around the Minnesota State Fair's Veterans Garden near the south side of the Agriculture and Horticulture Building. Jerry, the State Fair's general manager, was touched to hear the veteran say that the garden was becoming sacred ground. Now in its sixth year, the Veterans Garden was made a permanent fixture at the State Fair in 2005. Jerry, whose father received a Bronze Star during World War II, helped to establish the garden to recognize Minnesota veterans. Today, plaques commemorate the service of veterans all the way back to the Civil War. This year, a rededication ceremony of the Veterans Garden will take place at 9:30 a.m. on August 30th during Military Appreciation Day at the fair. Also on Military Appreciation Day, all active and retired military, their immediate families and veterans will receive discounted admission. State Fair organizers also donated 500 free passes to Gold Star families in Minnesota. Thank you to the Minnesota State Fair for showcasing how Minnesotans strive to go beyond the yellow ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects service members and their families with organizations, agencies, companies, community support, training, services, and resources to bring our service members all the way home. To learn how you can, like the Minnesota State Fair, make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org or visit them here at the fair on West Dan Patch Avenue. When we return, we'll take a look at employment opportunities and the help available to our growing population of women veterans. That's right here on News Talk, AM 1130. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons, along with my special co-host, Commissioner Larry Shelledo, and we're broadcasting from the Minnesota State Fair. Commissioner, we've got another one of your special people here to join us.
Oh, yes. Barbara's been with me for a great number of years with the National Guard, and she's been key in the Yellow Ribbon program and our deployment cycle support unit. And as she chose to move on, we're very, very fortunate and blessed to take her in and give her focus on a new area of emphasis nationally. And she's in the process of making sure that she continues to lead the nation in support for our women's veterans.
So joining us now is Barb O'Reilly, who I'm used to referring to as Lieutenant Colonel, but she's retired now. She's the Director of Women, Veteran, and Employment Initiatives for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Barb, Colonel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Commissioner.
Can you tell us a little bit about this new program that you're involved in?
Well, as the Director of Women, Veterans, and Employment Initiatives, I think I'll refer to something that the Commissioner says all the time, and that is everything is connected to everything. And so I think that what I'm really trying to do is look at all of the vast number of resources that are out there to support women veterans, to support the different employment initiatives, and to support veterans as they're coming back from deployments and trying to find employment opportunities, and then connect those resources to the people who need the support. And the big challenge that we have out there is the disconnect. And so what I'm trying to do is connect those resources with the people that need the support.
So, Barb, can you tell us a little bit about the shift in the number of women veterans we're seeing now compared to 5 or even 10 years ago?
Well, women veterans are the fastest growing population of veterans that we have. Over the past many years, the number has certainly grown. Right now, about 20% of the recruits that are coming into the military are women, and so we're making a lot more women veterans. Right now, about 91% of the military occupational specialties across the different branches of service are open to women, and so we get a lot of young women coming into the military wanting to find a way to achieve their goals. They have the military as a way of doing so, and so they go on deployment, they serve alongside the men, and they come home as veterans. We expect that in the next 5 years, the number of women veterans who are using the VA healthcare system will more than double. And so there is a very high demand out there for resources for women, and a lot of women that come home, they have served. Every woman who's ever served in the military has volunteered. I think we're all very proud of our service, and we come home. What we really need is the recognition and respect that is given to veterans.
You know, Tom, I'd like to add something here, too. I think that's kind of that I've observed as we look at it. And I often refer to it as the Jessica Lynch syndrome, We all know Jessica Lynch was one of the early captives in when we first went into Iraq. And she was with a rear echelon, as we commonly refer to it in World War II, unit. And a lot of the training that the military was doing is the combat forces were in contact, and the rear would be coming up trying to keep close to them, but were never expected to be engaged. And they got captured immediately. And as you know, in Vietnam, that war also was a what I call a 360-degree war. It was all around you. It was everywhere. So the training, not just the conditions, but the training that the women go through is just the same as with the male, because they don't know where they're going to be. One of the first Silver Star recipients from the Guard in the Iraqi War was a female military police out in force, in combat, so forth. They normally don't get pushed out in the lead elements, but they have to be prepared and ready to participate right alongside their male counterparts. So that's created a whole new dimension. So just because they're female doesn't mean they haven't seen the same things their male counterparts. So this is a whole new paradigm and a whole new level of research. And what we found, and maybe Barb can talk about this a little bit, is the fact, for example, many of our hospitals were designed for the male. And all of a sudden, one of the first complaints was they don't like going to some of the Veterans Administration hospitals because they were not female-friendly. So I don't know, Barb, if you want to refer to that.
Well, I think absolutely that was a challenge. But right now, every Veterans Administration hospital is required to have a woman veteran coordinator. The hospital in Minneapolis has a super woman veterans program. Everything is co-located. It's very convenient to go there. The service is awesome. The doctors that are there are absolutely top-notch. And so I think that it really has evolved. Right now, at the Veterans Administration hospitals, there is comprehensive, full care for women veterans. Everything from, gender-specific care for breast exams to... Even in some cases, there's care for children who are born. So I think it's really come the full spectrum, and now we do have very good care at the Veterans Administration Hospital for women veterans.
Barb, you were stationed. You spent a year commanding a unit in Iraq.
Afghanistan.
I stand corrected. It's Afghanistan. I remember the day that you were accepting the unit to be deployed. I saw your eyes of your husband. Scared out of his mind, if you will. But, you know, what is some of your viewpoints of, you know, coming, one, being deployed, being away from your family, and then coming back from your viewpoint?
My experience, I think, is very common to other women veterans now. 40% of all women veterans are moms. And so what I experienced was leaving my two little girls, ages 4 and 7, you know, having them basically torn away from me as I went off to deploy for a year. And it's a huge challenge. I think women as caregivers, we really carry a big burden. It's difficult. It's heart-wrenching when you're in Afghanistan or Iraq and you can't take care of your children. And, you know, I got the call on Easter Sunday that my daughter slammed her fingers in the door and she was crying for her mommy and I wasn't there to help her. So it was very difficult, and it's something that a lot of women experience. And as we come home, we have to, you know, really take that time to readjust and reintegrate with our children. And there's the program at University of Minnesota called ADAPT is a tremendous program to really help parents as they reintegrate.
Barb, we just got a minute left. You're not only the director of Women Veterans, but Employment Initiatives. Quickly, what type of employment initiatives are you working on?
Employment is one of the greatest challenges that our veterans face right now. And so, again, looking at the resources that are already out there available for our service members, the Department of Employment and Economic Development has workforce centers throughout the state with great resources for veterans and for all people. But the challenge then, again, is connecting those employers who want to hire veterans. We believe they're out there. Veterans make great employees. They're responsible, they're agile, they're accountable. If an employer wants to hire somebody who they know will get the job done, hire a veteran, and that way they can focus on those things that they need to focus on. So great opportunities out there for employers who want to hire veterans.
Barb, last question. Those employers want to hire some veterans, where do they go?
The Positively Minnesota website is a great resource. Put the jobs there. Contact the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Jim Finley is the proponent, the point of contact there, and put the jobs on that website, Positively Minnesota.
Barb, thanks for joining us today. That was Barb O'Reilly, the Director of Women, Veteran, and Employment Initiatives for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. After a short break, we'll be back to talk about higher education opportunities in Minnesota. That's right here on News Talk, AM 1130. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons with my special co-host, Commissioner Larry Shelido. Now joining us is Gina Sabania. She is the Military Education Director of the Office of the Chancellor of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Ms. Sabania, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Commissioner, have you been taking advantage of your higher education opportunities?
I tell you what, I have totally. In fact, I've often said that when I came back from Vietnam, education kind of saved my life. I didn't know what I was going to do, or I was just kind of lost. All my peers had moved on. So I went back to school, and what I didn't realize that for 4 days a week, I was forced to get up and be someplace in the morning. So I'm very, very pro-education. I've spent 31 years of my life in the educational system, and I'm very, very proud of the work that Gina has done.
Gina, the commissioner isn't your average veteran, I'm sure. Can you tell us about the education opportunities available for returning veterans?
Right now, there are a lot of opportunities for veterans and service members to return to college. There are benefits available both at the federal and the state level. The Minnesota State Colleges and University System has 31 colleges and universities on 54 campuses around the state of Minnesota. We produce over 36,000 graduates annually, and we have 39,000 programs on our 31 colleges and universities around the state of Minnesota.
And Gina, the education benefits for veterans are a bit different than when the commissioner and I came back from Vietnam. They're pretty complicated now.
Yes, they're very complicated, and it's up to each individual service member what kind of benefits are available. And through the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, there's the Higher Education Veterans Program that has regional coordinators throughout the state to help our service members and veterans to figure out the benefits that they can use when they return to college.
In the last few years, you've set up offices all over the place, haven't you?
They have. They have around, I think it's 51 of our 54 campuses have Veterans Resource Centers on the campuses.
So you're ready, willing, and able to help them work through that paperwork, aren't you?
Absolutely, right. Along with the Higher Education Veterans Program.
Tom, if I could just add something to that.
Yes, sir.
I'm absolutely convinced because it's statistically veterans were more apt to go to college, but were also more apt to drop out. And with these vet centers that Gina's established under these 51 campuses and has been phenomenal because that's where veterans talk to veterans and they can speak, and it's increasing the retention rate and the success rate of our veterans as they return for their continuing education.
The commissioner and I are speaking with Gina Sabania, the Military Education Director for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, here on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk, AM 1130. Gina, the commissioner mentioned veteran-friendly campus. Can you elaborate on that?
There's many aspects to becoming a veterans-friendly campus. One of them, as Commissioner Shelito mentioned, is a Veterans Resource Center. And having that college or university be a part of the service member opportunity colleges, there's student veterans clubs, there's faculty and staff training for when veterans return to college. That's an important aspect as well. There's policies and procedures to protect the service member and the veterans, whether that's call-up policy when they're deployed or deferral for their tuition and fees if they're using federal tuition benefits.
And Gina, can you tell us what kind of economic impact results from the veterans using their education benefits?
There's a lot of impact, but on our colleges and universities, we've seen an increase of 44% from fiscal year 2008 to 2010 of the returning service members and veterans to our Minnesota State Colleges and Universities.
And last question, I would guess that there's a lot of veterans coming back using their education benefits, and are you expecting that to go up again?
Yes, we expect it to go. We'll be getting the numbers in the next couple of weeks of what happened in fiscal year 11, and we'll be waiting for those veterans this academic year as well.
You smile when you say that. You're ready for them, aren't you?
We are ready for them.
Ms. Sobania, you're doing a great job. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Gina Sobania is the Military Education Director, the Office of the Chancellor of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. And now, from the flag line, a Minnesota Patriot Guard update with former State Captain Doug Bly. Doug, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, we're doing very well.
All right. Outstanding. See, before we even start, I just want Tom and all the listeners to know, Doug, just what a great job you've done with the Patriot Guard. And I just feel that Patriot Guard has done so much for the great state of Minnesota and really across the nation. So I just want to let everyone know you're an outstanding organization, and I'm very, very proud of you and your leadership and the whole crew. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. It's been, as standard answers, it's been an honor, and it truly was an honor and continues to be an honor to serve our military and the families and those who ask us to be there. And it's been one of the best things that happened to me in my life.
Doug, over the last several weeks, I know that I've had to read some memorials because we lost some Minnesota troops. That means that that you and the Minnesota Patriot Guard have been busy as well.
Well, and we have been, Tom. You know, since the last time we talked, we've lost four military members from Minnesota who were killed in action. Marine Corporal, Lance Corporal Robert Greniger, two of the Navy SEALs, Special Operations Petty Officer Nicholas Spihar, and Special Operations Chief John Foss. And then just this last weekend, we were invited to the mission for Sergeant Harmon from Boston, Minnesota. And these are tough days, Tom. You know, I was looking back over this year to last year, and we've had through July 31 mission days for KA and those we've lost in action. And last year at the same point in time, we've had seven. And I think it's just a reflection, I think, of the sacrifice our military continues to make and putting themselves in harm's way. And, you know, this is the least we can do to be there for this family. And, you know, we had the missions for the Navy that we were invited to be part of were powerful. I mean, you know, these young men were the best of the best, and we'll never know everything they did. And I will tell you the one sound I never want to hear again, I heard at Fort Snelling National Cemetery during the internment processes. I was standing close enough to the shelter here, but not in a position to see. And if you don't know, the Navy SEALs, as they honor their brother, they take their trident pins off of their blouses, and they all walk by that wooden casket top, and they smack it down into the top of it. And for 10 minutes, all you hear is just this popping sound of all those Navy SEALs who were there popping that trident pin into the top of that casket. And I walked in as I, you know, gave my condolences to the family directly, and it's a very, very powerful sight. And I will tell both of you, I never want to hear that again. It was quite a week with the Navy SEALs, and I talked to the Rear Admiral who was there very, very briefly, and they've been so busy with the 30 that were lost in the attack in Afghanistan, and they have been doing nothing but traveling city to city, you know, being part of these funerals for these families. And Rear Admiral, who was there, was in town on Friday for Petty Officer Spihar, flew to Utah, and then flew back to Minneapolis on Monday for Chief Foss. And, well, I tell you, you could tell they were worn out. They were very, very tired from the emotional. I mean, these were their brothers and their friends. It's not just someone they were assigned to. These were their brothers and friends. So it was a tough run for us over the last couple of weeks. I would not try and fool you otherwise.
Powerful and important that your Patriot Guard riders are there with the flags. Doug, we've just got about a minute left. You had some good news for one of your ride captains.
I have a very good friend. His name is Ron McAdams from Kandy, Ohio. And Ron was part of the Bandito Charlies and served in Vietnam. He was in 1st Battalion, 16th Infantry Mechanized. And Ron was in the Battle of Binh Long in part of Operation Kentucky Cougar. August 12th, 1969, was involved. I don't know if it was an ambush or how they want to call it. Ron was he was a track driver, and they were attacked by the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong, and he was handling everything from an M79 grenade launcher to a 50 caliber on the track to his M16, and was injured very, very badly. And after 42 years, Ron found out he's being awarded the Silver Star. And his first sergeant, Al Herrera, who lives in Washington, is as well. And we're just very, very proud of Ron. And I think the best way I heard it put, the reason it took this long to get it, is that everybody who's from the Bandito Charlies who was involved was either dead or on a gurney in hospital. And there was no one there to really do the after-action report. And very bittersweet for Ron. About a year and some odd months before this particular incident Ron was involved in, his cousin Lyle was lost in a helicopter crash in Vietnam, and they still have not recovered his body. So, you know, it's bittersweet for Ron, but I know his cousin Lyle's looking down on him. And you know, we're just very proud and very happy for him. And, you know, just a quick pop out for the tribute to the troops. They're doing their annual memorial ride in September. They visit families across the state over 3 days who've lost a military member over the last couple of years. So look up Tribute to the Troops on the Internet and join them on the memorial ride in September.
Doug, I know when the commissioner retired that you gave him a vest so that he could help stand the line. But for our listeners, who's eligible to join the Patriot Guard Riders, and how do they do it?
Absolutely. Anybody who wants to join, Tom, and thanks for asking. It's military service is not required. Motorcycles are not required. It's www.mnpatriotguard.org. Click Join Us on the left-hand side and just come with a 3x5 United States flag and a pole and be ready to provide honor, dignity, and respect for our military members.
Commissioner, we're about out of time. Thank you so much for co-hosting the show.
You bet. Thank you very, very much.
And Doug, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you both. And Commissioner, I'm looking forward to seeing you on a motorcycle one of these days.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks, gentlemen. We're just about out of time, but before we go, if you are a veteran who owns a small business or thinking about starting one, the 6th Annual National Convention American Legion Small Business Conference is coming up soon. To find out more and to register, we post a link on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Shelley Kendrick and Barb O'Reilly of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Gina Sobania of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, Doug Bly of the Minnesota Patriot Guard, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash, and of course our special co-host this week, Commissioner Larry Shelido. Please join us at 10 a.m. this Tuesday at the fair as we talk to troops from around the services, Army, Navy, Marines, and Coast Guard about their experiences and the latest news. That's Tuesday at the fair or on the air next Sunday morning at 7 right here on News Talk AM 1130. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.